And thank you so much for listening in or joining in to Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, "We know who we are, but not who we will be." I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better, more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into cells again and then reforms into the butterfly in the chrysalis. And then while it's in the chrysalis or the cocoon, it has to be in there to make its wings strong enough to fly. That can't be easy, but neither is busting through those limits that society places upon a person. And today, my guest, Christine, is going to talk about some limits that were placed upon her, on her family, and how she is working to help others bust through limits. So, Christine, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Shelley. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to get into your story. I do just have a couple more businessy things to do. So if you are joining us, give us a hashtag live and let us know where you're joining us from. If you're doing it in the replay, give us a hashtag replay and where you're joining from. And also, if you have any questions or comments throughout the show, if you're watching live or in the replay, put them in and I will make sure to get them to Christine that she can answer them. Or if it's a question for me, I will answer it. So, Christine, tell us your background. What was it like for you growing up and with your diagnosis, which I didn't mention until just now?
Yeah, actually, I kind of was under the radar. I had three siblings. We went to parochial school, and one of my younger brothers had a significant speech delay and speech impediment when he was very young. So really, like, all the focus kind of fell on him, right? Because it was the most obvious kind of disability in the family. Mm-hmm. And so when I kind of was going through school, it was kind of like, she has so much energy, or she can't, you know, has a hard time focusing. And you look back, right? So it was like clear all the signs. I never got diagnosed, right? Parochial school, I got to high school. Nothing there. I kind of was like B, C, C student kind of. So I was like falling under the radar, you know, like the whole way through. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, yeah, it wasn't until kind of much later. I also had a really bad car accident where I ended up with a mild traumatic brain injury. And it was kind of like, when that happened, the ADHD was really hard to manage. I felt like because I didn't know I had it. I just knew that I was hyper-focused. I knew how to get things done and run events or, you know, kind of whatever I needed mm-hmm. to do. And so it wasn't until when I was going through it with my children, filling out questionnaires, feeling like, wow, this feels like a lot about me. Yeah.
And to a couple of points in there, I mean, A, because you were in a parochial school, they don't have the same viewpoint as someone in a public school would have. And secondly, because of being a girl, girls are so underdiagnosed, I think, with ADHD because it doesn't present like it often presents in boys. And you know, it didn't sound like you were getting into trouble, just like, oh, she has a lot of energy or, you know, she's having trouble maintaining focus. But it wasn't like, you know, she's getting up and moving around the class and she's bothering everybody and, you know, which tend to be more obvious where school personnel will go, maybe we need to look further into this.
I actually had that happen with my oldest daughter. She didn't get diagnosed until like 16. And she was a great student, did well. And then all of a sudden, like once we got to high school, it was kind of like things were falling off the track. And I feel like girls mask and manage it for a lot longer until they can. And I think that's right. The thing about ADHD that nobody said to me when my daughter got diagnosed, like, you know, hey, by the way, you know, look out for dyslexia, anxiety, depression, other serious mental health issues. No one said those things. And yet so many families I know and work with, including my own, have faced some of those challenges. So it's not just a blanket diagnosis.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Such a great statement, and so glad that you brought that out, because we have this comorbidity, which just is a fancy word for saying you have more than one thing going on. But it's not discussed as often. It is starting to be seen more. And then it is difficult from a medical standpoint, if it is a medical diagnosis, and also from an education standpoint, to determine, well, which one is more, you know, as far as like, is it, which one do we want to help the most? We want to help any of the comorbidities, but which one kind of drives maybe the other ones? And that it's, they're all so overlapping and intertwining that I don't know that we have to do that, but I know that both education and medical worlds try to do that.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So I know we had this recently with a client of mine where it was, okay, we've got autism and we've got a specific learning disability. Which one do we make as the primary eligibility? You know, well, does it matter? As long as we're giving the child the services. But that's a whole nother episode.
A whole nother episode.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So you've got yourself now as an adult, and you feel now, have you got an official diagnosis as an adult, or have you self-diagnosed?
Well, I self-diagnosed, but I also went to a doctor who, once I filled out all the forms, took a look at it and gave me his thumb and said, I think, you know, like, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
I said, I know. And so the only thing I haven't gotten I did try medication initially kind of with him. He said, let's try it out. It wasn't for me. I know it helps a lot of people. I think, mm-hmm. I feel like I've been in survivor mode with it for so long that not even realizing that I don't need, I appreciate how it helps you focus and everything, but I feel like I just am so good at like the survivor kind of skill kind of, and that's what I say about my daughter too. I'm like, she has a certain set of like skills that I know she got from overcompensating or, you know, through the masking. So I don't necessarily want to change how I think or how excited or how passionate I get and feel when I'm working on something or with a family.
Right. So that brings us to the next part. So you work with families now, but there was a journey that brought you to that point. Would you share about that journey that got you to the point of working with families?
Yeah, sure. So where we were in our town, I kind of was the first parent to, you know, raise my hand on a Facebook group and say, am I the only one going through this, or is anyone else facing this, and this? And of course, I think something had really happened that really had annoyed me to my daughter. And I really called it out on this like little group. And all of a sudden, like within minutes, there were like 30 responses. Let's band together. Like, you know, cause I was like, we can't keep getting picked off. Like, we need to unite, and help each other out. And that's simply was just a call for like help and action amongst parents. And again, I wasn't an advocate. Everything I learned kind of on the fly, because parents don't know what they don't know. So I didn't know I was being like lied to or misled until I was told I was being lied to or misled. And then I realized I wasn't the only parent that was happening to. And so I kind of formed, and there also wasn't a, you know, Welcome to Special Education Parents Club either happening. So I found some peers, right? And we all just kind of got together and started kind of trying to figure things out. So once we navigated kind of going through that, COVID had hit and we all kind of dispersed because we became, you know, sped teachers overnight and working and trying to like, you know, manage everything. The moms I stayed in touch with, where we were kind of silently cheering each other on. I'm like, we can't stop now. We have to keep going. And so I really fought hard for my daughter. I felt that she had not received a free and appropriate public education. I did not feel that her school environment was safe. We had a history of bullying incidents that ended up with an anxiety disorder. And so I knew outplacement for her was going to be the only way she would, you know, kind of get through school and get caught up. She was severely behind. And so once I figured out how to do that for myself, because due process and, you know, mediation is very, very expensive for parents, especially due process here in Connecticut. It's upwards of 50,000, you know, just to start. And most families can't afford that. And so I taught myself, I just started reading case law. I started reading case law that I wanted to see where parents won. So I was like reading the IDEA, and then I kind of went into state, you know, complaints, which were usually, you know, not really in parents' favors. So I ended up finding in Connecticut something called CHRO, which is the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. And what a blessing that was. So they came, you know, I went to them. They actually filled out the whole complaint for me. I signed it, notarized it, sent it back. They do investigation, and then they serve your district. And it happened really kind of quickly from there. And once I was able to get something for my daughter and, you know, work with the district, we were able to help a bunch more families win, you know, significant schooling for their children. But it didn't have to be that way. That's what really, when I look back at it, it just never had to be that way. If we were able to come together and collaborate with the district, we wouldn't be seeking outplacement, right? We'd be supporting you, getting the teachers in, getting the support staff in, getting a parents' community started, all the things that, you know, that we just want. We want the community. We want our kids to have that. Mm-hmm. We want our kids to get the services, and we want everything to be transparent. So that's kind of how I got here. And then once I kind of realized I think I'm good at this. I did help a few more families out that really would have never been able to afford an attorney. They call me like the Erin Brockovich of special education, because I help the families that can't usually afford it. Right. Most of those families are English as a second language, who don't realize their rights, but, you know, they just knew that it didn't feel right what was happening to their child. And again, if you're a mother, trust your gut. You're probably, you know, if you think you're being lied to,
yes,
they are.
I say that so often. I get parents and you know, they'll say to me, well, how do I know if it's enough? And I said, trust your mama gut. And usually it's mama gut, but there is dad gut too. Yeah. You know, there are dads out there who are fighting for their children as well. It just tends to be more moms doing it. And so often that's what I've heard from parents is, you know, I just kept feeling that something wasn't right. And I just kept going. And I don't think we give quite enough trust to that intuition.
Yeah.
And that sense of, I don't know what's not right, but something is not right.
Something's not right. Yeah.
Yeah. So trusting your gut and following your mama gut, and you yourself, as you said, you have gotten several million dollars worth of compensation
for families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
it's all an outplacement. Nobody. And that's the thing that's really different. I think if you look back to, parents have always been upset, like, after this has happened for, you know, this has happened to my child for 5 years, but you can't sue for damages, right? You can't do that.
Right.
CHRO was a little different. You can kind of do that in there, and it puts more pressure for the solution or for the collaboration to be more fulfilling for the parents. And so I'm really one of the best things about living in Connecticut as a SPED parent is that, I mean, it might take you 8 years to get respite, but you do have, you know, you have CHRO right. helping you out.
Yeah. And that's so wonderful. And I love that you're able to help some of these families that need it, but can't afford it. And that's what I try to do through my advocacy as well, is I try to do other things to bring in income. So I can't offer for free, but I can keep my costs really minimal because I know there are so many families who need my services, but, you know, they have maybe 10, 12, 15, 20 other priorities above me. Yeah. And so, you know, they're just like, nope, we have these other priorities to pay for. We can't take you on as well. And I know in every state, you know, they do have parent training information centers that do help for free, but sometimes you need that person who can be right there with you. And when you're talking to parent information centers, there's a wait list.
Vague. It's so vague. Yes. It really feels vague. And that's like calling the Office of Civil Rights. They're like, mm-hmm. so happy you called, but it's going to take years to get anything done, you know?
Right.
But it's hard because as parents, we feel like, and this is why I go back to your gut, trust your gut, because those days turn into weeks and months and years so quickly. And then you look back mm-hmm. and you're like, how did a whole school year go by? And we're still at, you know, we're still fighting because we don't feel like we're on the same reading level. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I tell parents, take your own data. If your child is coming home
yes.
telling you that they're getting bullied, I want you to whip out your phone, get your voice memo. Don't let them see it, and record them and ask them the story 3 different times. And I'm telling you, the story will be the same each time because kids don't forget trauma. And then you know, have that transcribed, you go to your principal and say, here's everything in writing. You know, 3 times we took the story down. We need to have this investigated. Here is the audio and the transcription. So, you know, again, take your own data. I thought I was fight one time. I'm going into a meeting and I thought this is going to secure my daughter. Right. I thought I was so proud of myself. I went in so fragile. And I was like, look, you know, here she's reading and she's doing this. And we never wrote, she has dyscalculia and dysgraphia and dyslexia. And, you know, everything always looked like Morse code.
Yeah, right.
We actually went to this really amazing private school that is for children with dyslexia and ADHD and all the things. And as a parent, I knew right then that they weren't even going to listen to me because like, there was like a little, we can meet her needs here. And it was so crushing because now I know that's predetermination, right? That
right.
you're not going to hear me out. You've already made up your mind. So for, you know, I think it's just learning for parents. I think when parents, you know, in the beginning, and I was probably guilty of this too, the first couple advocates, I thought, oh God, I hired an advocate. My problems are over. You know, I don't have to do anything. And quickly, I you know, realize that and turn that around. And I tell parents, I need a timeline. I need to know all the dates. I need your mm-hmm. communication screenshots, everything. And so, right, it's so different. So when I was kind of, before I even started helping parents, I was in the tech world, preventing school shootings and really amping up student safety. And I realized there was really just no solution for what I was looking for. You know, here I am, you know, working for these kids at day, going home at night, trying to go through papers, organizing all the different documents, evals, trying to keep on top of it. Cause I was calling PPT meetings like every week for my daughter. Cause I learned wow. that you can have as many as you want. You know, they can't yes. say no if you have valid concerns. And I had a friend who said, Christine, I organized one for every week. I got what I needed. So I was like, hey, it's me again. We need to have a meeting. Now I'm concerned about this. But just having, you know, kind of having all your data, having your meetings, showing up and being a squeaky wheel, but a collaborative wheel, right? Like if you can actually, yes. that's the best result for the child. Like I can fight all day and I can help parents either find a lawyer to go to, you know, state complaint or whatever, or, you know, file a CHRO. But I know that costs the child the most and the stress on the parents the most. And ultimately your relationship with the district. Mm-hmm. I like to come to it from to a place of collaboration with the parent and then go in to talk to the decision makers because that's ultimately who's going to have the yes or no for your child. And if you go in with the parent who is educated and empowered and is aware of, you know, what their own child is entitled to, and you come to this place of, you know, we just want to collaborate with you. Can you meet us here? I've never walked out of a meeting where we haven't had a great collaboration. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's kind of always where I advocate from, is let's collaborate. Let's see what they can do for us. Let's see what we can do for the child, and kind of create a relationship that is, you know, beneficial for the child moving forward.
Right. And that's exactly how I approach it, which is one of the main reasons I call myself an IEP coach, mm-hmm. because when a school hears that, it's not that the hairs on the back of the neck stand up immediately. It's like, oh, a coach, you know, like we have sports coaches, we have academic coaches. But when, even when I taught, that word advocate was adversarial. And it, you know, it just, it put that connotation of, oh, somebody's going to come in and, you know, they're going to be fists raised, ready to fight. And I always tell my clients, you know, I come from that collaboration because I'm going to leave that environment, whether it's literally, you know, leaving that meeting, or, you know, if the parent feels like they've got everything and they don't want me to attend meetings anymore, but they just want some behind the scenes coaching, they're there every day with their child, dropping off, going to school functions, picking up, whatever it is. And exactly what you said, that animosity between the parents and the school staff is not beneficial for the student. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. As educators, as schools, we are supposed to be educating the child. And, you know, it benefits all of us, whether we have a child in school in this moment in time, or have never had children in school, or never had children, because these children are growing up to be members of society.
They're going to be the ones taking care of us in the future. Why wouldn't we make sure they have every tool and resource available to them?
Exactly. Yes. And I don't say that as a, like a means of like money, but sometimes I do have to bring that up. Like, we're going to pay for them now, or we're going to pay for their services later.
That's why I fight so hard for early intervention, because you'll talk to parents, right, who had the early intervention 3 years old, right? The children were in, you know, the early pre-K program or getting services. Those kids are usually exited out pretty quickly, like by the time, because the parents fought hard to get them the early interventions, usually are doing some things out of school, outside of school as well. But that is how you remediate and you can really get that child on the right, you know, on the right track. Sometimes the kids do stay in special ed. Sometimes, you know, it might be just a, you know, delay, speech delay, but get the kids caught up. But you can't do that if you're not doing that early. So right. It's hard to see little children, you know, ignored or, you know, no, they're not eligible, but the parent is home with them all day long. They know their speech is not sounding right, or they know the speech should be being addressed, or they should be getting. So it's hard to see that. And that's usually what I'm, you know, usually trying to fight for, is to get those types of services. We don't want to move schools. We just want you to beef up the services, so this child's on the right track for, you know, kindergarten.
Yeah, absolutely. And so on point, that early intervention and that whole, when you hear from a school, well, let's wait and see. We don't want to give them that label. We don't want to put that stigma on them. If your gut as a parent is saying, no, we're not, you know, the wait and see approach is a bad, bad, not scientifically and research based approach. And it, you know, there is actual research to show that wait and see is a horrible approach.
It's the worst thing you ever, is that if a parent here, I was told that myself. I was told, you know, let's wait and see, you know, let's give it the summer, after my daughter hadn't learned anything all year. Every kid learns different. And in my mind, I was like, okay, you know, maybe because she is a June baby, maybe she, it, and I'm trying to like ration why the assistant principal's telling me we need to wait all summer. Cause again, that was early on and I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know that evaluations should have begun from that meeting. I didn't know I should put it in writing, to get things going, because we took the summer, didn't do anything except I was doing flashcards and all the things, right, and she wasn't retaining anything even after like 12 days. We get to first grade, and I must have finally said the right thing in writing, because then that prompted the evaluations. She was also in RTI for a year and, you know, 2 months. So I think, you know, between those two things, we finally got her evaluated and identified. But even then, it's like pulling teeth, right? You're kind of trying to get, and I don't remember that I even walked out of there with an actual diagnosis. you know, for my, I was told she probably wouldn't read till fourth or fifth grade. That's verbatim what we were. And I remember leaning into my husband and I just said, that doesn't sound legal.
Yeah.
I didn't have an advocate at that time. I didn't have a lawyer. I brought my father, who has his master's in education. And you know, he just sat there and everything sounded great. Until we realized it wasn't.
Yeah. And, you know, as a teacher, I would present things in a positive way to the parents, but at the meetings, and as much as I could. I mean, unfortunately, we're not in these meetings because everything is sunshine and rainbows. You know, we are in these meetings to discuss that there's some weaknesses we want to shore up and work on some skills that are missing. But I was also talking to the parents outside of that meeting, you know, all the whole school year. So they knew what was going on. But in those meetings, it does sound like, oh, that sounds like a good plan, or, oh, that, yeah, it, maybe it's not as bad as what I thought as the parent. And when I turned around and became an educational surrogate parent and went into my first meeting as the parent, I was just like lulled in. You know, like, oh yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. This sounds good. This sounds right. And then I was like, kind of like my, you know, somebody shook me and I went, wait, hold on. You know, it's so easy to just go along because they sound very compassionate. They sound very knowledgeable. They are supposed to be doing what's appropriate for your child. So you want to trust them. And yet it often doesn't. I would say, you know, a large portion of it does work well and things are written in IEPs correctly, but, you know, there's a sad chunk that it's not done right. It's not done as appropriate as it could be. And those are the ones where you and I are coming in and you had that in your own situation and saying, hold on, let's look at this a little different. And so you have done that through advocacy, but what is this fabulous thing down at the bottom of the screen? It says you're of SPED Connect.
Yes.
What is that?
So SPED Connect is my third child, my baby. SPED Connect is literally a solution that I built for every parent, no matter what your child has, no matter how many diagnoses, no matter where you live, no matter what the diagnosis is to actually find a community, but also SPED Connect is an education and life management app I built for parents. We're going to be launching a little bit later in September, if not early October, and it's amazing. And we have a couple different features to us. So yes, we have the app, which is a parent's best friend. You can house all of your documentation, so organized, from, you know, your evaluations to your IEPs, if your child has 504, no matter really what they have. We also have some other tools on there for parents, because a lot of these children have anxiety and maybe have mood or behaviors. I just wanted a facet of tools for parents that really would help them kind of get through everything. So we have the calendar for their meetings, all of their documents housed. You can have multiple children because most parents actually have more than one child with a learning disability. So you can have both children there. You can also co-share, because like almost 90% of our families now are divorced and co-parenting. I wanted a system that parents can have equal access to, no matter whether they're married, separated, divorced, co-parenting, whatever the situation. And then one of the other, you know, two of the other things are the first like national SPED directory. It was impossible for me to find the right providers for my daughter. Like once I walked out with 8 diagnoses, I was on 8 websites and I looked calling, you know, so many doctors. And I thought, well, this is kind of not smart, right? I want to find out about my daughter who's, you know, one child in one place. And so ultimately that's what we built. And then So you can find the providers, whether you're looking, you know, lots of parents are looking for sensory friendly dentists or, you know, adaptive sailing or dance classes or martial arts or new game, like new gaming tools for children, like learning apps. We're going to have that as well. So we have our SPED directory. We have, and we also have a community, a true community that is private for parents, that they can come and ask questions, meet peers. Because again, there was no, you know, like welcome to special education. There were no casseroles showing up when we got our diet.
Right.
Say, like, my girlfriend and I always joke. She's like, where are the casseroles? Like, where, you know, we're not, is this a new thing? Like, where parents are sometimes, you know, really taken aback when they get the diagnosis because you had a certain vision for your child's life or certain, you know, dreams for them. And parents don't realize these dreams can still happen. It's just going to be a little bit different. And then you have parents who have children that might be non-speaking or nonverbal, and they're facing a whole different type of future. And I think just having that community there to help rally the parents is really just everything.
And I think that is such a fabulous idea. I cannot tell you how many times I have had a parent say, I feel like I'm on an island.
Yeah.
I didn't know where to look. I didn't know who to contact. If there was just a file that I could go to where I could learn, you know, oh yeah, like you said, the sensory dentist, the, you know, and of course, I mean, all across the country, you know, there are going to be thousands of options.
Yeah.
And so how does one go about getting into your directory? Because, you know, like I said, there's going to be thousands of opportunities for this around the country.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. So if you go onto the website, you can easily schedule a demo or reach out for, there's a few buttons on there where you can reach out and prompt an email for us. And you can reach out directly. You can also find me on LinkedIn and send me a message through there, Christine Dodage or SPED Connect. We'd love to, you know, we've been really inviting most of our early inaugural kind of members in, which I love that because I feel like we're such a close-knit community. And it seems like it's just spreading from there that if, you know, you're like when I met you, some other women were like, you know what, I want to introduce this provider too. I think she'd be great for this space, or this is a great financial planner. I've got to reach out to her. So it's even real estate agents. I've had parents reach out and say, I need somebody who's going to understand that I can't live near a lake. I can't live near a busy highway. They need to understand, you know, my child. And I said, okay, I have a great person for you. And so this kind of organic community that was already starting is just becoming this larger directory.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I've been in the world of special education now, but not as a parent. I've been involved with the world for about 30 plus, well, it's not about, it's 30 plus years. And there are so many things that I am constantly learning that is one of the reasons I love to do hashtag no limits, because I do continue to learn, like, oh yeah, what a great idea, knowing what realtors are going to have an understanding about that. You know, like you said before, the dentists or the doctors, or finding out even, you know, what schools, like if you move into a large district or you know you're going to move to a new area, and you can reach out and talk to that group of people and say, okay, yeah, this school is very collaborative. This school is not so much, you know, and just having that information but sensory friendly parks in the area, playgrounds that are accessible for all, you know, having all of that, I have just learned over the years how important that is. And I'm so excited that I get to share that kind of information and awareness, like this is important. And so now to have all like this directory put together, I'm looking forward to being a part of it. Because I think it's just going to be amazing for parents to just go to one spot. And then within that one spot are going to be there thousands and thousands of information connections that they need. But to just know, here it is. Here's what you've been asking for decades.
Decades.
We're putting it together.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's going to be ever changing as evolving. Information comes in.
Oh yeah. I mean, we actually get to talk about information as it comes in. And I think that's what's so great about the community is that parents can actually come on, introduce themselves. I met friends years ago when my daughter was little. We were on like mom websites. I still have some of those friends to this day and right. live all over the country. So I can't imagine that this would be much different, right? Because we're all just looking for that human connection. And I think a lot of times parents don't realize that you will have two sets of friends. You're going to have your sped mom friends and you're going to have your other friends, because your sped mom friends are going to understand when you have to cancel if your child's having a behavior or a meltdown and you can't make the 13th barbecue that you've canceled. You're not going to get an attitude or be frustrated with when, you know, parents that don't understand don't really have the same tolerance. So I always say like, right. make sure you find your tribe. Because when you have COVID, you know, we're signing up and getting you soup and we're dropping off your kids snacks for school. So, I think just having that, just knowing you have that feels really nice.
Cool. I can imagine, because like I said, what parents have told me over the years. And as a teacher, I was taught in small communities. Like, and when I say small, I'm talking less than 5,000 people total in the community. So then, you know, the schools themselves are less than 1,000 or even a few hundred in some instances. And so in my brain, I thought, you know, because they always say, oh, small towns, everybody knows everybody. But everybody doesn't know everybody. You might see that person and go, oh, yeah, okay, they live in my town. But to go, oh, that's a mom whose child has ADHD, because ADHD is not one that you can see, you know, or, oh, that's a mom whose child has autism. I would love to connect with her because my child has autism. And even in these small communities, it's been baffling to me to hear parents say that, like, how do you feel like you're on an island? Because like, I know that your neighbor's living with a child who has a disability. I couldn't share that because of confidentiality, but I thought, but how do you not know? But I guess, you know, it's not something you're like walking around with a banner going, hey, my child is neurodivergent. Do you have a child who's neurodivergent?
Do we need like neurodivergent child on board? I know there's no, right. There were just kind of, you know, we're just kind of like just trying to survive, because oftentimes our kids don't even understand, right, what's really happening.
Right.
So
I want to just tell people that are just listening and not seeing this in video format that your website is SpedConnect, SpedConnect.io.
That's it.
It's not com or org or edu. It's .io. So spedconnect.io. And to get a hold of you through your email is Christine, Christine, at spedconnect.io. So what do you feel is that this is going to look like in the future? I mean, because right now it's an app, and like we talked about, it's ever changing, or it's going to ever evolve. What solutions are you hoping to accomplish with this?
So many.
I mean, we talked a little bit,
a little bit, and I have to hold some things to my chest because there's NDAs and trademarks that we're waiting for. But so many solutions for parents. You know, we thought of this, and now we have this branch and this branch and this branch. Because I just keep seeing the needs when parents are coming to me saying, hey, I'm really struggling with this. Do you know? And then you have, you know, some of these amazing companies that have come to us and said, we need help getting our name out there. And you seem to know a lot of people. So we really want to not only just help the parents, I really want to help the providers, who I think, you know, people shouldn't just think, oh, well, they're a provider, they make money. No, they have dedicated, they went to college, got their education, have dedicated their service to our families. Like, I feel like it's time to invite you all to the table and kind of bridge that gap. Because I also think it will keep the provider side accountable, right? How many times I had advocates disappear 6 hours before a meeting, not to hear from them again. Or can you imagine as a fan? Right. So I would never recommend that person. So we actually are able to, you know, give feedback. If we, you know, see a red flag on a provider, we get to kind of pull them aside and say, okay, we need to do an investigation. You've had like three, you know, really bad reviews. So let's take a beat and, you know, let's talk. I mean, we really want to be that personable, because I would never recommend anybody that didn't end up being what they needed or were supposed to be for me. And I think most of us share that information. You'll see that, you know, you'll see that actually a lot. So I think this gives the provider and all the emerging providers, right? Think about all of the BCBAs that are emerging. I mean, new psychiatrists that are just coming out of school. Like, just because they're new doesn't mean we shouldn't be thinking of outside the box. I feel like they're progressive, and just having those options for parents, I think is going to be a game changer. We want everybody here. We want every foundation out there that's doing good work for our community to be in this directory. So let's say your child has epilepsy. You know, we work with the Brett Hundley Foundation, and they help identify individuals with epilepsy, which 30% of autistic individuals end up with epilepsy. So you see these correlations.
Right.
Just to have all of these, you know, these resources, no matter where you are.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And so right now you have a team of how many people working on this directory, and how many do you anticipate you will need in the future?
Oh, we're going to build out quickly. I think we've been doing it all ourselves. We bootstrapped everything ourselves, and even the coming down to the marketing, we have a team right now. I would say six of us. We have a full-fledged tech team. That's none of us. we have a CEO. I'm the chief creative officer. I just feel like they're all brilliant people. Everybody has a connection to special education. We have some amazing educators out of Texas who really revolutionized their own SPED departments, not having due processes for almost a dozen years, because they actually met with the families and did the progressive things. And so those are the kind of people we have working at SPED Connect. Just really great talent. Everybody, we always say, like, leave your egos at the door before you kind of check in to the meetings. There's just no room for it. We're here to get this into the hands of parents and help their children. And so, yeah, it's a small team, but super dedicated. I think what's really unique is that we'll have more partnerships down the line. We know that insurance companies really like this, and we know other planners and larger companies really like this. So however we can get this into as many families' hands as possible. So parents will have the option to buy it directly, but we're working with school districts who would like to roll this out for their SPED parents. They see it as a means to build a bridge and foster a more organic SPED parent community with the administrators, more transparency, and overall, I think just a progressive step, right, to help empower your parents who just want to make sure their kids can learn and thrive.
Right. And I think this will be received by school districts, because while advocates are part of the group of, you know, who are going to be in the directory, it's also all the things that schools don't know, but I think would be happy to pass along, like the, you know, the medical professionals, the therapy professionals, the, you know, like I said, the playgrounds, the realtors, the financial planners. I mean, there's just so many things that parents go to schools and ask them about, but they don't know. And so, and it's not necessarily a fault. I think it's just how life is.
And I think that there's unsaid expectation that, you know, you leave there and you think the district should be the one like guiding you through this. It's almost impossible, right? For them to say, okay, Christine, you have 8 diagnoses. You are not crawling in bed this weekend. We are going to set you up, and you're going to, you know, we're going to figure this out. I felt like the next day I woke up in a foreign country, not speaking the language, not having a map, not having money, and not having any friends. And I just knew that I never wanted another parent to feel like that. Again, that's that island, that island feeling. And so to hopefully bring everybody together, like that's ultimately my goal.
Yeah. And I think it's very possible in the world of virtual, you know, I mean, I've heard it said more than once that there was something good that came out of the pandemic, and it was learning that we can do things virtually, and yeah. Our world is so much different in a good way, as far as like, you know, you're in Connecticut and I'm in Illinois and we're having this conversation yeah. and we're sharing it out to everyone that chooses to listen. You know, and I think you said when you and I were talking before this, that your team members are not all right there in yeah. Connecticut. They're in different parts of the country, because that's possible. We've realized that that's possible now.
Yeah. COVID showed us that. COVID showed us that we can work from anywhere, literally anywhere, like down the road, we want to hire other SPED parents who, because it's funny when once I help somebody, they're like, I want to give back. I'm like, great. I want you on SPED Connect, because we want the parents engaging while you know, and parents can have amazing advice. If I didn't ask parents, I don't think I would have ever gotten here.
Right.
But also that's why it's so important to invite the providers to the table, because you really have this whole community now. And then think about what that does for the provider. Is that actually you're vetting yourself, you're kind of branding yourself every time you respond, and you're letting the parents see you in action, right? Responding, mm-hmm. what does this mean, or what does this mean? And one of the other things that I think is really important is that we're going to have a community for the providers as well. We're going to have like monthly meetings for the providers so that they come on and can meet the rest of the community. Because how many times would you like to hear maybe about a great sensory center for kids that you can, you know, refer your parents come to me all the time. Christine, where can I have a baby, a birthday party? And right. It's hard around here. We in Connecticut, we don't have a lot of that, but you cross over into New York, into New Jersey and other states, there's plenty of sensory centers and sensory gyms for children. So I think there's a lot of good that's going to come out of this.
Oh yeah.
I hope. but I really want parents to see that there is a whole world for us, and there are all these amazing providers and places to go and things to do. And just, it's not just for children that are not, you know, neurotypical.
Right. Yeah. And I know in talking with you, you know, we talked about different places, like again, having a birthday party, a sensory friendly birthday party. I never thought about that until being immersed into the world of special education. And it's, I know it's, you know, like 15-20% of the population. And so, you know, when people are building businesses, they're not looking for servicing a niche, you know, they're looking to service yeah. The larger population, but it is a need. And
it is a need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a need, not just in our country, but all across the world, but we'll keep you local for now.
We can easily, we are planning on going outside of the U.S. rather quickly, because there's parents that are also managing their child's education, their medical records, all of the things. And it would just be so much easier for them to have all of those, you know, those components and features as well. So yeah, we're excited about that.
Yeah. And one of the things, and you mentioned it before, and I'm not sure if this particular part was mentioned, but how they'll be able to keep all those documents mm-hmm. in your app.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I know people who have a full closet just dedicated to the paperwork right now.
I was one of them. And so I thought this is kind of crazy that, you know, in the year we're in, that we're still lugging bins of paperwork. And it was just every time I would hire a lawyer, they'd say, oh, bring everything in. And you know, I'd get, you know, 4 hours of my retainer just sucked out of it. And I would have a problem with that because I knew everything went in meticulously organized, dated by information. And so I wanted to make it so simple so that if a parent was actually just trying to hire an advocate or hire a consultant, and that person wanted to see certain documents, you just give them access, or you could just send them to them. But it really is like your full organizing, because you have to save everything. I hope parents, we always tell parents from the beginning, save everything, throw out nothing. You never know what you're going to need. And this, I didn't want another parent having to lug two bins of paperwork around. And so just being able to have it and access it, I think it's time that we get tools that we need.
Yeah. And to your point of save everything, I just recently had the Parent Training Information Center for my state on, and I asked them, I said, I get parents that ask me how long they should keep their documents after their child is out of school. And she told me 35 to the age of 35. And wow. She's like, you may not need it beyond age 35, but hold on to, a lot of it. Maybe not necessarily all the stuff from childhood, but if you get a diagnosis or an eligibility, even at a younger age, but then that sort of filters away for some reason, just knowing that you had that for some agencies is enough that they will go, oh, okay, well, yeah, then you're going to qualify for this service.
Absolutely. You're right. You're 100% right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So having all of that is just, mind boggling. I mean, to think of the storage. And so to be able to have it all digitally right there at your fingertips, in essence, because if it's an app, it's on your phone, and we all have our phones with us or our watches with our phones. So, Christine, our time is drawing very quickly to an end. And I just want to give you opportunity to, if there is something that you had hoped to discuss today that we have not covered already, now is that opportunity to do so.
No, I think we covered everything. I just would love to hear from any parents, reach out, drop a line, any providers, if you work with the school district, reach out. We are really excited to get this into the hands of parents, but also have this robust community as soon as possible, and just doing all the things, for families.
Yeah. So you're looking at launching towards the end of the month, you think?
Yeah. We're perfect. Everything is a little, as soon as we get there, we're like, well, let's just make this perfect this way. And so I would rather release something that's absolutely perfect, but that doesn't mean we can't just start working on the provider directory and have all the other things. So it might be released in stages, but either way, we're ready to serve, parents and the providers, and just kind of bring these two worlds. I feel like it's a huge undertaking. I didn't really see that before, but now I'm like, well, this is why everybody says this is a huge undertaking.
Right. That was a blessing to those of us who wanted you and needed you to do it, because if you had seen how big it was, you probably would have said, like everybody else, it's too much. Yeah. I certainly have tried to put things together, and I'm like, there's so much, and I'm just me, and I don't know how to put all this together. And so I am so thankful that you are putting stuff together, and I'm so excited to be able to share you with people that I know, and businesses and organizations and companies, and share information with you that I've gathered over the years about, some other things that could possibly go in there. And so I so appreciate what you're doing. And I know that it is going to be such a blessing to millions of families because it's so needed. So I greatly appreciate all of that. Well, if you have nothing further, then I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today. Thank you. There were a few people that were joining us. I appreciate the likes. And as I said at the beginning, if you are watching this in the replay, please be sure to give us a hashtag replay and where you're watching from. Any questions that you have that Christine did not answer, or you have questions for either one of us for services that are provided. Again, Christine is Christine@spedconnect.io. I am Shelly@shellykino.com. And I appreciate you. Make sure that you go out today and you appreciate the butterfly turning into the caterpillar. Nope. The caterpillar turning into the butterfly. I've never said that backwards before. And just don't place limits upon people's potential. We don't know what kind of medical miracles, scientific breakthroughs, or just plain miracles are going to happen. So thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.